Good morning, church. Man, it's great to see y'all. And it has indeed, Nick, been a beautiful, beautiful day yesterday, beautiful day today. Thankful for that and thankful to be together with the family once again. I think Nick does a great job. In fact, when you got up there, my wife passed me a note saying what a great job you did of analogy, the modern day parable. And I think she's encouraging me to be more like Nick. So I'm working on it. Nick does always do a really good job. Many others, we're so blessed to have those gifted teachers and speakers and people who are willing to share, for whether it's for Lord's Supper devotional or in Bible classes. Just really blessed to have an abundance of gifted people like that. I wanted to take this moment to remind you, and we have got a lot of opportunities to sort of get plugged in here at Forest Mill. I saw this morning that somebody else had been added to our Remind. And if you haven't signed up for Remind, there's information about that in the bulletin. But basically, that just gets you on the list when we send out announcements that, you know, class this Wednesday night is canceled due to flooding, or so-and-so is going in for surgery, or we need people to volunteer for this activity, or we try to send out announcements that we think apply to everyone on Remind from time to time. So there's one thing. The other thing is, during our giving time, I was glad just to pull my phone out and be able to just say, okay, I want to give, you know, X amount of dollars into the general fund, and you can just do that really, really quickly. Our church app is a great way to do giving, because I do not carry around a checkbook, and just to be able to do that really easily and quickly without a big fuss is great. I just put in my bank account number, my routing number and account number, and now every time I do that, it doesn't cost the church any money, take any money off that. If you want to use your debit card or your credit card, that's fine too. There's just a really small fee. So just know if you give, you know, $100, then what's it, a dollar of that, or, you know, something like that, a dollar of that gets paid to the fees. It's just a really small amount. So we're thankful for however you give. And if you want to give in person, you have a check or cash, we've always got a box at the back. You can do that as well. But some great opportunities for giving there, and I'm really thankful that we've kind of moved forward with some technology to enable more ways to give and to connect and to serve, and we hope to be utilizing those even better and more efficiently into the future. Now, we've been studying through the Sermon on the Mount. You have your Bibles. You want to open those up to Matthew chapter 5, but this morning we're going to talk about a topic that's probably near and dear to many of us, near and dear to our hearts. A mother ran into the bedroom when she heard her 7-year-old son scream. And she showed up and found that he was at the mercy of his 2-year-old sister, who had a firm handful of hair. Now, many of you have toddlers. You know they can get a death lock onto your hair, and there's just not much you can do about that. So she gently released the little girl's grip, and she's trying to soothe everything over, make it right. She gently told the little boy, she goes, you know, there, she didn't mean it. She doesn't know that it hurts. And so the boy sort of acknowledged, and the mom left the room. And as she started down the hall, she heard the little girl scream. She rushed back in. She said, what happened? Little boy said, well, she knows now. I think most of us appreciate a little, we'll call it well-placed revenge, right? Making things right or getting even, right? We'll even call it fixing things, like, you know, I'm going to fix him or I'm going to fix her wagon. I don't know where that phrase came from, but that's an interesting one. We know what it means. It's not too much, right? It's not going overboard. It's not too little either. Just evening things up, we would say. It's the way that the world works. It's maybe spreading a few untruths around about the person who's been going around spreading lies about you. It's returning the favor to your neighbor who throws your package into your yard when it gets misdelivered to his house, and just throwing his package into his yard when it gets misdelivered to your house, right? Returning the favor. Or one of my personal favorites, this is one that I struggle with. If I'm going down the interstate and someone is riding my bumper and they get around me, I assume that's the way they want me to drive. And so I will also get right up their tailpipe, right? That must be the way they want others to treat them, because that's the way they treated me. But is that really, really what God called us to? We would call it giving them a dose of their own medicine, right? Or who among us wouldn't sympathize with the story of a guy? His name's Al Masters. True story. Al's just an ordinary guy. Al Masters, he was married, had a little boy, had a small business, considered himself very blessed, and then just before Christmas, several years ago, but it was just before Christmas, his little boy was killed by a 15-year-old kid who was driving a car without a license. And Al Masters was filled with this rage, this deep desire, revenge. Even though it was just a 15-year-old kid, and this kid could not suffer the full weight of the law that Al thought he deserved because he was juvenile, Al Masters wanted the book thrown at this kid. And that desire for revenge just ate at him. Now, as we're going through the Sermon on the Mount, we come to the fifth contrast that Jesus draws concerning personal wrongs. And if you've been with us for the last few weeks, you know there's a lot of things that we struggle with. We compared it to a soap opera, how it can be the very best and worst of what we experience in life. And this is the fifth one of those situations. And he describes it in Matthew chapter 5, verses 38 through 41. You have heard it said, eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If someone strikes you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if someone wants to sue you and take your cloak or take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. If someone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Give to the one who asks you, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. This is a familiar phrase, if not a whole familiar teaching to us. We've heard it said, eye for an eye and tooth for the tooth. Jesus' teachings, or Jesus' listeners certainly had heard that, but even we, you know, thousands of years later, are familiar with the phrase, eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth. And Jesus says, that's the old righteousness. The old righteousness was that the injurers should be injured in the exact same way. That was the law that was practiced. It covered any sort of damage that was done, whether it was personal damage, property damage. The intent of that law, the law of retaliation, was that reciprocity came through equalization. The benefit at that time, what set this law apart from the laws that governed all the cultures that surrounded them in the ancient Near East, was that it limited revenge to no more than what the injured person had suffered, right? It was a major point of law. It was a major advancement in civilization. In other words, if someone comes up to you and hits you over the arm with a board and breaks your arm, you don't any longer have the right to pick up that board and break both of his arms and maybe a hand and a finger in the process, right? Or if he stole your cow, you don't have the right to burn down his house with his family in it. It was to limit the reciprocity, to make everything evil. In fact, this law, this eye for an eye and tooth for the tooth, is largely the basis for our legal system even to today. That's what we want to do. We just want to make things even. And so even here we are, you know, thousands of years later and in a, all the way across the globe and a totally different situation, but even today we see the benefit of eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth, but we also see the flaws of eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth. In fact, it rarely succeeds in making things totally equal. Sometimes it is the person who has the wrong done to them initially that no matter what is done to the offender, they just feel it's not enough. It doesn't feel even, right? If someone were to, say, take the life of one of your loved ones, then them serving 10 years in a prison doesn't seem even, or 20 years, or 50 years, or whatever, that still doesn't seem even to me, right? It doesn't feel balanced out. And sometimes, you know, if someone steals your lawnmower, them serving 10 years in a prison, that doesn't exactly feel even either. So it rarely succeeds in making things equal. So what is the right kind of heart that we ought to have with regard to personal injury? What should we feel like? What should we be aiming for? What is the righteousness that Jesus is shooting for here? Now, we've already learned how to deal, or how Jesus encourages us to deal with anger and contempt and desires. His goal, as we learned through his teachings here in the Sermon on the Mount, was that those desires, that anger and that contempt and that these desires, that they don't run our life. That's what he's getting across, is that you cannot be led around like a dog on a choke leash by your desires. And that is the opposite teaching of what we usually hear in our culture, is that people do things because they can't help it. Their desires led them to do this, and you can't help but do what you want to do. My parents would have begged to differ when I was a kid. If I walked through the kitchen and I am addicted to chocolate cake and there is a chocolate cake sitting out, and by the way, I am addicted to chocolate cake. It's a real malady. If I walk through the kitchen and I'm like, just reach out and swipe a finger through that fantastic icing and told my mom, I can't help it. I just love this chocolate cake. My mom would have taught me that I can indeed help it. Right? That's not an excuse, or wasn't an excuse in our household. But often we are told, no, you just got to do what you feel like doing. And Jesus says, no, that's not true. You cannot be led around by your desires. Now, it's going to be natural to still be tested. You're still going to want to do the wrong thing. You're still going to want to get angry and lash out. You're still going to have contempt for some people because maybe it's people who have wronged you, or people who have wronged someone else, or people who serve in a profession you think is demeaning, or it's still going to be really tempting to be given to those desires. But they cannot control us and leave us unable to sort of function, right? We can't be led around that way and becoming unable to tell good from evil. So once we understand that our desires don't rule us, then when personal injury comes along and someone does real harm to us, if we realize we're not run by our desires, then our world doesn't suddenly become our injury. That's the story that we're told in culture, was that if somebody does something wrong to you, somebody wrongs you, they sideswipe your car, they steal your weed eater, they steal your girl or whatever it is, they take your job, that all of a sudden your entire world is this wrong, this injury. But under Jesus' teaching, we have a larger view of life and of our place in God's world. We can see God at work clearly and see ourselves in His hands, even if we don't understand or like what is happening to us. What's more, and this is a big, big one, this is a big step, is that we are also able to see the offending party, the injurer, as more than just the person who hurt us. We see the injurer's humanity, his or her humanity, and their limitations, which, by the way, we share in those things. We also have humanity and limitations. In short, we can also see the offending party, the injurer, as being under God. That's the vision that allowed Jesus, hanging on a cross unjustly in a world He helped create. All things were made by Him, for Him, and through Him, right? And He's hanging on the cross at the hands of His creation, and He prays, "Father, forgive them because they don't really understand what they're doing." And in truth, they didn't. They didn't know. They didn't know the great good they were attempting to wipe off the face of the earth. They didn't know the great sacrifice He was making on their behalf. They didn't understand that the kingdom of God was larger than their small minds. They couldn't see that. And so Jesus prayed truly, "Father, forgive them because they don't understand what they're doing." Remember the story of Al Masters, the man whose young son was taken at the hands of a 15-year-old driver, how he was bitter and he was full of revenge. Well, 1 year after the death of his son, on Christmas Eve, his wife finally talked him in coming back to church. And he listened to the story of how the word was delivered to those shepherds out in their fields. And he recognized that he had become one of the world's ungood, we'll just say. And there in church, he began to weep. And when he went out and left and went the next day on Christmas Day, he set out to find out more about the young man who had killed his son. And he found out that this kid, now a 16-year-old kid, came from a broken home and he lived with a mother who was an alcoholic. He came to see that even his injurer was human and had limitations. So what are the ways that the people in the kingdom, we as kingdom people, ought to respond to personal injury and affronts and impositions? And Jesus goes through four different kingdom responses to these wrongs. Number one, he says, turn the other cheek. That's the one I remember being cited most often. Turn the other cheek. Remain vulnerable. This is the one I don't like. I don't like this response at all. You can do what is necessary to protect yourself, but do not take defense into your own hands. And even if I can swallow this bitter pill for myself to tell my wife or to tell my kids this, no. I don't want them to still be vulnerable. I don't want them to still suffer further affronts. And it only when it concerns self alone, by the way. Jesus never said that we ought to turn someone else's cheek. This has to be a personal decision. You can't make this decision for anybody else. And allowing oneself to be harmed rather than harming the injurer, it is a vow of peace, even at great personal cost. The second response, Jesus said, was to let him have your shirt, right? Try to help as appropriate those who have won legal cases against them in court. If he sues you For one thing, you give even more than that. Or try to meet them ahead of time and who is about to sue you, and in the spirit of love, give them more than they're about to sue for. Become deeply interested in what the other person needs and give it to them. This, again, boy, this is not one I like. If someone is trying to take something from me by legal means, by legal process, to give them above and beyond, which goes hand in hand with the third thing, where Jesus said, go with them too. Now, just, I'm sure some of you have heard this before, but they were as subjects to the Roman authorities, and there's Roman soldiers who are stationed there. If they came along, they're walking down the road, and they're carrying their pack that's got their equipment, their clothes, their rations, that sort of thing in it, and they're walking down the road, and they see you, just a commoner, near the road, they can compel you to carry their pack for a mile. That was Roman law. And so if a Roman soldier told you, carry this for a mile, by golly, you had to pick it up and carry it for a mile. But he could not compel you to go any further than a mile. That was the law. You could make someone carry your pack for a mile, but no more than that. And so what Jesus says is, if they compel you to go a mile, you go 2 miles. You go, or as we would say, the extra mile. Why would you do that? It's because it has nothing to do with the law. It is telling the other person that you see them more as more than just a cog in the wheel of the state, more than just a robot. It is going up when it's your turn to be called at the DMV, and despite how terrible a day the person behind the counter is having, and by the way, not a job I want, not a group of people I really want to deal with all day, every day, and it is going up to them and doing something positive for them, seeing them as more than just their job. Or worse, even harder, getting pulled over by a state trooper and being super extra kind to them, not just to get out of the ticket. I'm all for trying to get out of a ticket, don't get me wrong. But treating that person who is costing you something, probably money, certainly time and inconvenience, and treating them as a human being. That's what Jesus encourages us to do. And finally, giving to him who asks of you. And this is not the legal basis. This is not the law compels you to have to do this. This is someone just asks. Like, you don't owe them anything. You don't owe them money. You don't owe them service. You don't owe them anything. They have no claim to you whatsoever of any kind. It's just a request. Hey, can I have $20? And it's Jesus saying, don't evade, don't ignore, don't turn away from those who would borrow. Luke's version of this same teaching says, and if anyone takes what belongs to you, do not demand it back. That's Luke chapter 6, verse 30. Now this, again, we've talked about this before, this is not an endorsement to give people the means to harm themselves or others. This is not someone coming up to you at the gas station and say, look, I'm really struggling. Could you give me a handgun? And saying, well, they asked me for a handgun, and I have a handgun, so here you go, right? Any more than it is if they say, hey, you know, I need money, and you've got a strong suspicion that it's about more than just putting gas in their car. It's about putting fuel in their veins. You have to use some wisdom. But if my neighbor, whom I know and is just a terrible money manager, says I need to get some tires so that I can get back and forth to work, me loaning him some money because he asked, right? So you take all of this together, all of this teaching here together, these four statements, more than any other to me in all of this teaching, Jesus teaching here, more than any other teaching, this is what makes me want to throw my hands up in despair and sink into a bottomless pit of legalism. Because I'm looking at this and I'm like, I can't do that. Because these situations are familiar situations. I may not struggle with some of the rest of it, but I struggle with this one. And we can only imagine that Jesus is now laying down some laws about what we got to do. That's what it looks like to us. That's the way I was raised to read Scripture, and I read Matthew 5, and that's immediately what I lock onto. Jesus is laying down some serious laws here. And all that changes, all that understanding changes when we come to realize that these are not laws. These are illustrations of what a certain kind of person, a kingdom person, will do in situations because of their character. Jesus is not laying down laws. He's describing the character of a kingdom person. These are not laws of righteous behavior because you can't cover everything. Now, what good? I'm all for the 1 mile to 2 mile thing. You know why? Because that law doesn't apply to me anymore. So let's keep that one, right? Or if someone technically does sue me for my tunic, I am ready. I don't know anybody who has ever been sued for a tunic. So, that's where I want to go. And what Jesus is saying, no, this is not laws. This is the kind of heart I want you to have. And if they're only laws that have to be obeyed, when even then you could obey them in the wrong spirit, right? Oh, man, he made me go a mile. I'm going to carry your pack, but I'm telling you this, your clothes stink. Buddy, they reek to high heaven as I'm carrying them along. And make that mile the most miserable experience of this guy's life, right? I'm going to go 2 miles. You'll see, I am going 2 miles. Or meeting with the person to whom you owe a debt or is suing you in court and just forking it. You want money? Here's money. Just take the money. Take all the money. Well, now I did exactly what Jesus told me to, right? So Jesus is not laying down laws. He's telling you what kind of heart he wants you to have. Right. Jesus said, turn the other cheek, but I'll knock your block off if you do it again, right? When we are in kingdom life, when our hearts are changed into a kingdom person, these are not laws. These are just what sort of come out of us. In the case of Al Masters, he went on and met that 15-year-old boy, now 16-year-old boy, who had taken the life of his young son when he was driving without a license. And because of his Christmas Eve experience and the way he saw himself subject to the mercies of God, he ended up giving that 15-year-old kid a job in his shop. Hired the young man who killed his son to work in his shop. And then later, when that kid's home life degraded even further, he took that boy into his home, gave him a place to sleep. And that boy, who grew into a young man, says Al Masters, today says Al Masters is the most saintly person he's ever known. Now, Jesus didn't make a law telling Al Masters how he had to behave. But he did reveal the sort of heart that would change the world. And in Al Master's case, that made all the difference. Would that have been possible if Al hadn't given up his hope for revenge? Could the kingdom still have been shown in the light of Jesus Christ if Al had taken a toll on that 15-year-old kid? Would the cross have still seen glory if Jesus had struck his murderers dead from the cross? No. No, it wouldn't. In February of 1990, the Los Angeles County Bomb Squad received a call about a suspicious pickup truck that was parked in downtown LA. They checked it out and discovered 400 pounds of explosives in 5 55-gallon drums. If that bomb had detonated, it would have blown, they estimated, a crater 75 feet wide and 25 feet deep. By the way, something that we got a pretty good picture of in Nashville this last Christmas. But they found this bomb in time, and the man they arrested, turns out he had a history of setting off explosives in the area, but all his previous bombs had been small. No one had ever been injured or anything. He was just a loon, right? But this one would have surely caused certainly severe damage, if not death. So why was this guy doing it? Why was he planting bombs in downtown Los Angeles? Well, as it turns out, all of the bombs were placed near the IRS building. It turns out that this man had a vendetta against the IRS. They owed him money, or so he claimed, and he wasn't going to leave them alone until he got every penny back. And you know how much they owed him? How much he believed they owed him? $14. $14. It's hard to believe that the desire for revenge can become so strong that someone would destroy lives, including their own life, in the quest for $14. But it happens again and again and again. Because when you become consumed with desire for revenge, the particulars of the offense do not matter at all. It doesn't matter if it's $14 or $14 million. It could be someone cuts you off in traffic, or it could be someone actually does you bodily harm. You've just got to get revenge. Could be that a coworker makes a snide remark, or it could be that a coworker intentionally sabotages your career and gets you fired. Doesn't matter. Regardless of the offense, once you've become consumed with the idea of getting revenge, the focus of your life shifts from being good and doing good to getting even and making it right. 1 Peter says, "For it is commendable if a man bears up under the pain of unjust suffering, because he is conscious of God." But how is it to your credit if you receive a beating for doing wrong and endure it? But if you suffer for doing good and you endure it, this is commendable before God. To this you were called, because Christ suffered for you, leaving you an example that you should follow in his steps. So what do you need to do this week? Who do you need to forgive this week? What grudges do you need to let go? What wrongs do you need to just endure? Why are these so important? More importantly, and this is going to be our focus question for the week, who do you want to become? Do you want to become the man or the woman who gets even and makes it right? Or do you want to become the man or woman that Peter was talking about, that Jesus was talking about, who has a kingdom heart, who endures, and who changes the world because of it? The calling for us is to be the latter, but it's not something that can be forced upon you. I can't make you let go. The elders, godly men that they are, cannot make you release your anger and your frustration and your desire for revenge. Your spouse cannot do it. Your boss cannot do it. Your parents cannot do it. Your friends cannot do it. Nobody can make you let go of that burden but you. But let go of it, to let go of it is what Christ compels. That we instead take up the burden of his cross, to be willing to suffer on his behalf. And if we can pray for you this morning, encourage you for strength, for forgiveness, for a change of heart, God offers all of those and more. If we can help you at all, won't you come as we stand and as we sing?